This is the Shogun Podcast on TV Podcast Industries. This time we're talking about Shogun Chapter 4, The Eightfold Fence.
You agreed to train these men, you remember?
I do, yes. For the return of my men and my ship.
Please, be patient, Hanjin-sama. As Hatamoto, you have been given a home, a generous salary of 240 koku a year.
I don't want any generous kukus.
And Fuji-sama as a consort.
Well, I'm sure she's very nice, but I don't want a woman. I wish to pillow her, pillow on her, or near her, do any damn pillowing at all.
In any case, she will look after your house and your servants, handle your financial matters. To refuse would be a terrible insult to our lord.
I do refuse. I refuse all of this. I came here on the clear terms with Toranaga. Sorry. Toranaga-sama. Now he's bloody vanished. And I'm bloody prisoner all over again. Just for better living quarters.
Welcome back, fellow warriors, to TV Podcast Industries. We're back talking about Shogun Chapter 4, The Eightfold Fence. I'm one of your hosts, Derek.
Hello there, fellow warriors. I am your other host, John. Welcome back.
Oh, yes. Excited to talk about the fourth episode of Shogun. Going to war, potentially, yes, by the end of this one.
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Don't leave your kids unattended by the pool, I guess, is the motto on this one.
Yeah, but absolutely. This obviously is going to be our spoiler-filled discussion about episode 4 of Shogun. So hopefully you've watched the episode before listening to the podcast. Hope we've given you enough notice. But if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please go over to tvpodcastindustries.com where you can subscribe to Shogun on its own, or you can subscribe to our main feed on TV Podcast Industries, or to any of the other podcasts that we have been talking about over the last 10 years of podcasting. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the episodes of Shogun, or again, any of the shows that we're covering. You can email us to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com, or you can join us over on our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TV Podcast Industries. We have a spoiler post up there for each of the episodes of Shogun, so you can send us your feedback as you go through the episodes. But John, let's go straight into Shogun Chapter 4, The Eightfold Fence.
Yes, Derek, what are some of the details for this episode?
Well, of course, again, the show based on James Clavell's 1975 novel of the same name. This episode was written by Emily Yoshida. She is a staff writer on the show, and previously, interestingly, she appeared in the excellent Poker Face with Natasha Lyonne and Rian Johnson as an actress in the episode. In episode 4, the one about the rock band.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
Really good episode of Poker Face as well. I think I've watched that one quite a few times. It made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great show from last year. But yeah, Emily in the writer's room for the season, and this is her episode.
Very good.
Good stuff. Now, this episode was directed by Frederick E. O'Toole. Again, another director we've talked about many times before. He directed the finale of the excellent Watchmen, and also directed episodes of The Walking Dead, Westworld, American Gods, and two episodes of The Boys so far, with another episode coming in season 4.
Okay, excellent stuff, yeah.
Yep, lots of our favourite shows there.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, gosh, Watchmen seems a long time ago, so good to have Frederick Toy back behind the camera. Yeah. Directing for this episode.
I just rewatched Watchmen over Christmas. Loved it, even the sixth or seventh time through that I've watched that show. Really, really good. Let's see what they gave us with this episode. John, do you want to give us your synopsis for Chapter 4 of Shogun, The Eightfold Fence?
Sure. John Blackthorne and Mariko test their new alliance as they train Toranaga's gun regiment for war. Yabushige must navigate his past promises with Ishido when an old friend comes to the village. Yes.
Mm.
This was building up to war. And I guess, ultimately, at a timing that maybe Toranaga is not comfortable with. You know, he would not have wanted to have declared war at this moment.
Certainly not.
So I like that element to this episode for sure. And I think the other side of this that I really, really enjoy is, I think Yabushiga for me is just so, so good, but equally, having his nephew back on screen Kashigi Omi, I think he's really, really good. I just love the portrayal here of him. I love just how, you know, Yabushiga is continually surprised at how clever his brother's son actually is, and that his, you know, his brother never told him this. You know, we had that from episode one. We kind of see this. He doesn't really say it, but he kind of expresses it again, you know, when his nephew is giving him loads of different ways out of the predicament that I said there in the synopsis about having to navigate sort of past promises to these two lords of the Council of Regents in Ishido and Toranaga. So I loved this. I thought... it was great being back in the village of Ajiro. So I think we should get on to our Bushido number one.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is Ajiro prepares for the arrival of their lord. Yes.
Toranaga, yes.
Toranaga or Yabushiga? I love how this kind of almost sort of spins on a dime here with his, the faithful soldiers that come out to greet their lord, Yabushiga.
This is very impressive
really
as well.
Good.
It's really cool seeing it from the ocean as the ship comes in. You see the everybody lined up. There's been lots of preparation done by Kashigi. He wants to make a huge impression on their lord, Toranaga, as he comes. But he, you're right. I do think he also wants to make an impression on his uncle, Yabushiga, to show how good a leader he is. You know, again, we learned earlier on in the season, he's only had this, the leadership of this village for a year. So he wants to make big impressions when he has the opportunity to do so. But I thought this was really impressive, just seeing these legions of the army, all shoes polished.
Yeah, exactly. Come out in their warring finest.
Exactly.
And all very vocal for their lord, Yabushiga. And I love the fact that, you know, around this kind of ceremonial, almost triumphant arrival by ship to Yabushiga's, or this village in Yabushiga's fief, we have not only does Toranaga sort of inform Yabushiga that he's handed his letter of resignation in, which really puts the cat among the pigeons for Yabushiga because of all his different promises and why, you know, his rationale for doing them all. You have his son, Lord Nagakado, you know, saying, giving concern that an ally with ambitions is no ally at all. Like, there is a sense that they're coming into the lion's den here.
Absolutely.
A bit. And that, yes, Toranaga has jumped out of the frying pan into the fire to some degree. And certainly when they see all these cheering soldiers, cheering their lord's name, Yabushiga. I love then that Toranaga switches this round almost at the discomfort of Yabushiga.
Oh, absolutely. Yabushiga
sort of
is
how he
not
is
happy.
Bowing to these soldiers for their loyalty and their defense of Japan.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a good moment here in this opening. I absolutely loved this.
Totally. And I would guess that this is a very rare occurrence. Certainly having your lord coming to your hometown, that's very rare. But I think him actually bowing to them is something that none of them would have expected. This show of deference almost to the army, this show of respect to them. You would expect them all to bow to him.
Yeah.
But him bowing to them is quite a major moment, and it kind of calls back to episode three when we lost Buntaro, the husband of Mariko, him bowing to this soldier about to give his life to save his lord. That's what he's doing with this army, and they're taking that moment of respect, and it turns them all into cheering his name. So it really is
but
so
much
great.
Longer than Yabushiga, and sort of you see the kind of Okay, you can stop now, almost exactly. Look on his face. Yeah. And even
who are they loyal to?
Yeah, and also his nephew. I love that's kind of what's intertwined in this is also a sake joke by his nephew's mom, Kashigi's mother, I think it is. And I think, you know, like from episode one, it's the first time in 2 years that Lord Yabashiri has come to this fishing village.
Exactly.
Where his brother used to sort of look over and lead the village of Ajiro. And now, you know, they have the messenger to say that not only is he coming back again after such a short period, but he is bringing the Lord Kanto, Lord Taranaga. And, you know, so... And someone even higher up in the hierarchy. And I love the fact that, you know, as he arrives, she goes, I should have gotten the better sake.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And then as soon as he arrives, he also leaves again, not telling Yabashiri his exact plans.
Yeah.
And so heads off back on the boat. And as everyone else is going back into the village, she just goes, I should have bought the cheap stuff.
Exactly.
I knew I should have bought the cheap stuff.
Yeah.
And so I like that little joke running through this.
Absolutely.
This moment.
Absolutely. But it also smacks of a lot of those kind of state visits or presidential visits if you're in Ireland, or I guess royal visits when you're in countries. You know, people prepare for them for weeks in advance, making sure everything
absolutely.
Is absolutely perfect. You see them at the beginning of this episode cleaning up everything in the entire village to make everything look spick and span for the arrival of their lord. He gets about 3 feet onto the beach, and then before you know it, he's already in the boat back out to his back out to his ship before anybody knows. Even John is completely surprised by this turnaround from Toranaga leaving him behind, you know. But I really like that moment. It does it echoes something in me that I remember from all those kind of state visits that we've seen in over the years, you know. And also around this on the ship, we kind of get a little bit about John's new position as Hashimoto and the respect it's going to get, the fact that he's arriving back at this village, Ajiro, which was where he landed first with his ship, and he got his men taken from him and his ship taken from him, was treated really poorly, was taken as a prisoner. And now he's coming back almost in glory. They're being told that he has to be treated with the utmost of respect. He has to have a house set up for him. He has to have a whole entourage of people around him, a whole household set up around him. We talk a little bit about that. That could be our Bushido number two.
Absolutely. I think the Hashimoto's household. Mm. I have to say, I loved Mariko and Fujiko's chat, you know, where Fujiko, who, you know, is kind of asking why does she deserve all this really bad luck? You know, she's lost her husband and her son.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's being asked to be the consort to this barbarian. And she's like, I just want to be a nun. And we have Mariko saying, you know, this is how your lord sees you of remaining in service and having a meaningful life and carrying on in a position of meaning and of elevation in service. So, you know, there's all of this. As you say, he's back at the same village where he had arrived and was locked in a cell, had fish guts poured over him, was effectively urinated on by Kashigi, only to now have a household and a house prepared for him that he now has to go and inspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's in this moment of going to inspect the house that he actually realizes his place. You know, he feels he misunderstood, in fact, Toranaga doesn't actually answer him. John Blackthorne is, yes, I will lead these, but I want my ship back. I want my sailors back.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets no confirmation of this side of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he suddenly realizes that he's not allowed to just go out to his ship.
Mm-hmm.
He has to inspect his household instead. And he realizes that he is still controlled and his fate is still determined by Taranaga, even though he's not there. You know, he is a prisoner again for this period of 6 months to train this new regiment, but as he says, just with better living quarters.
Love that line from John. Thought it was really good description of his situation. It is just again being involved in these games that he feels like he's getting a handle on, and then another curveball is being thrown at him. You know,
and he Mariko doesn't want 240 cuckoos.
I like that. Yeah. I like that too. But Mariko lays it out for him as well when he goes tries to go out to his ship. She's the one that tells him, no, your ship is Toranaga's. Your men are Toranaga's, and he will use them whatever way he wants to use them. There was no deal struck that you get them all back and you are now in control of them.
Yeah.
That's not the deal. You are Hatamoto. You get a household here in this village, and you get treated with respect, and you get better food effectively. But yeah, he's right. It is just being a prisoner again. One of the things you mentioned about the conversation between Fuji and Mariko, just an odd nuance in the conversation. When Fuji calls out, you know, that she doesn't want to be part of this, why is her look so bad? She says she'll give 1 year, or Mariko says he only wants you for 1 year, and then she goes back up to Toranaga and says she'll give you 6 months. I don't know whether they just didn't show that conversation because Fuji was so much pushing back. Maybe she negotiated that with Mariko, or is Mariko just going back up to Toranaga and saying, as a polite way of giving Fuji less time, she's saying she'll give 6 months.
I think it was a question of negotiating by both Mariko and Fuji, in that Mariko possibly was saying 1 year in order to make sure that she got 6 months.
Maybe,
but ultimately Fujiko was, no, I'll do 6 months. So I actually kind of liked the jump where you will give him a year and then she goes to Toranaga, she'll give him six months.
Exactly.
Like, I don't care what you're saying.
Yeah.
I will do 6 months with this barbarian. You know, you're getting the impression here that this household will not be one of peace. And that certainly Fuji is not relishing this role as his consort for this position of power.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I like about this is the ebb and flow of their relationship and how it develops over this episode, actually. Yeah. You know, we have the moment where they're about to go to conduct the first set of training, foreign tactic training, and you have Yabushige's nephew Kashige coming to the house and asking for John to give up his two pistol, and he will not do that. This is the guy that it from his side insulted him, urinated on him, held him captive. So he's got no desire to be, you know, to be helpful with Kashige.
Exactly.
And I love the fact that you have with Fuji finding another way here where she will take as his consort his pistols off him, so that effectively he's not taking them to the training. And then Kashige looks to go and take them off her, and she just points them at him and says, effectively, no, you won't.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's such a great move from Fuji, because she's saying, yes, it's almost a compromise here. John will not take his weapons, but you're not going to take them off me. You know, that's what Mariko explains to John. She will protect them with her life, because it's part of her contract, effectively, as consort for John, that's what she has to do. She will protect what needs to be protected in the household. And again, this kind of leads into the conversation that we're hearing throughout the episode between Mariko and John. All of these traditions, all of these things that you need to respect about our culture and how we interact with each other, they're all important. And in this moment here, Fuji is pretty much putting her foot down and saying, you have to respect this situation. You know, don't disrespect us. Yeah. And exactly as you say, Khashoggi is respecting that because Khashoggi understands he can't take the guns off her. She knows the tradition. She knows that she has the right to keep them here. And they are still respecting his wishes that John doesn't carry guns with him throughout the village.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the really great thing is that, you know, these pistols become a moment of exchange between Fuji and John.
Mm-hmm.
John just says to Mariko, you know, can you say to Fuji that I'm very grateful for what happened and that I have a gift for her, you mm-hmm. know, and he gives her one of his pistols.
Yes, he does.
As a present. And in a sense,
tells her a trainer.
Yep. And says he will train her. She's mm-hmm. still looking at going, what am I going to do with this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to reciprocate that, she goes off to get her family's katanas.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a Hatamoto, he should have swords at all times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And gives him those. Now, again, he doesn't want those either, mm-hmm. but realizes that there is... you know, this is important for the honor of the household,
exactly.
for her family. It's a yep. gesture of respect, of reciprocating the gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really like this moment. You know, and there's a few touches throughout here where John Blackthorne's already realizing that he's got a gardener, or, you know, he's stood on the moss and mm-hmm. Mariko goes, you shouldn't stand on the moss. That's a sign of disrespect.
Yeah.
You know, because it takes so long to grow and, you know, all these different cultural elements. And then in the sort of reverse, he's there at breakfast with Fuji where he says, the rain is very beautiful today. Mm-hmm. So I just have a really funny line, but you know, it's just kind of this polite conversation, but he's almost trying to, because it's just literally rained all the time he's been there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in very wet, this village.
I thought it'd be reminding him of Britain, though.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why, you know, just the phrase of the rain is very beautiful mm-hmm. today seems like I don't know what else to say
yeah.
other than to say that the rain is very beautiful.
It is a very boring thing to do, just to talk about the weather and the rain. But I wonder if John is maybe trying to be a little bit more poetic
maybe,
when he talks
yeah.
to them, considering, you know, the conversation they had about pillowing on the road when they were talking, well, not pillowing on the road, but the conversation they had about pillowing between him and Mariko. I wonder if he was just trying to add a little bit of poetic license
yeah,
into his description
absolutely.
Of the weather.
Absolutely. I think the other side of this household building for me is that Mariko also has a room in his household.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, I think, you know, there's some really interesting things here. Like, it's a difficult situation for her because, you know, I think she gives him certainly gifts of her wisdom. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the title of the episode where she describes to him the eightfold fence, you know, that is built within themselves so that you can, as an individual, retreat behind it to mm-hmm. protect yourself.
This impenetrable wall.
It's
yeah.
impenetrable, so you mm-hmm. don't give away things, anything that might compromise you. And I think this
yeah.
links to Rodriguez's conversation in episode one
yeah.
as they're coming into Osaka Harbor,
mm-hmm.
As he says, you know, to John Blackthorne, what kind of man survives or prospers in this place? And he talks about the three hearts.
Yes.
The one shows to the outside world, mm-hmm. but it this eightfold fence seems to be a development of that third heart that is mm-hmm. only known to the person. And this is the thing that hides it effectively.
Exactly. Yeah.
And protects. So, you know, it was really well because it's like, you know, again, great line where she says, you know, do not be fooled by our politeness or the bows or the maze of rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Behind it, we may be safe and alone so that we can do what we need to do for ourselves.
Exactly.
And it links to Torunaga's philosophy of, you know, from what I said from the previous episode, which he talks to his son, where, you know, in this life, you only have yourself, and all mm-hmm. these kind of techniques are all around very much a personal protection
Absolutely.
Of your thoughts, secrets, ideas, and so on. And I just thought it was really, really good. This imparting of wisdom. And yet at the same time, you know, there's that kind of intimacy of exchange.
Mm.
But at the same time, then she's very officious around recording everything that he teaches. Absolutely. In the tactics for Taranaga.
Yeah.
And also in terms of how she approaches him, knowing what he has written in his journals and what are his orders that have brought him to Japan, and that presumably Taranaga has asked to get be translated
to
some degree by her. But she knows about them. She's read them in his own hand. So there's this tension between them. There's also them both trying to understand the other better.
Yes.
And it just plays out really, really nicely. Mm-hmm. I mean, even to the point where you have the hot pool scene, and you have Blackthorn really trying to protect Mariko, where she's trying to explain to him something of her past. And he says, you know, I see a woman that does not owe me explanations about her family past and dishonor.
I absolutely love this, because he refers it back to a description she'd made about after a very small earthquake hits the town, and she talks about, you know, the reason why we build our buildings the way they are is because we do need to take them down and put them back up very often. And the way that he links that to the conversation with Mariko, where he says, you know, if a house has been rebuilt many, many times, and I come in and see it after it's been rebuilt 50 times, I just see a rebuilt house. In other words, you don't need to tell me your past. You don't need to tell me how you get here. I see you as you, which is a really great moment between the two of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I, you know, then he starts talking about London and what would happen if they were there. And you can see, you know, when he starts saying about, you know, will you forget yourself, your troubles and your past? And she is absolutely connecting into that notion that all her troubles can sort of ebb away from this to some extent, in terms of his description of what would happen if they were in London, and what they would do.
Well, we're starting to see the start of their love story, really.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You know, we've heard parts of the conversation. You mentioned it earlier on about the about his talk of his children, that he hasn't seen them since they were born, the fact that he's been gone for over 2 years, and that's because he wanted to get out into the world and see the freedom. And he's showing her in this moment by the pool, he's showing her the beauty of the horizon, the beauty of what's out there. She's also, remember, just lost her husband quite recently beforehand.
Exactly.
But a husband that didn't love her, or at least treated her quite badly. And here she is with John, showing her a new world, giving her other options, other places, other things that she can see, which I really enjoy. You know, this is part of the main story of Shogun. Not only is it about the Battle of the Five Armies, it's also this love story of John Blackthorne and Mariko. So,
absolutely.
Great to see the opening seeds of this, I suppose.
Yeah, and also that she's seemingly, I mean, again, it's something more to clarify with the podcast, because it's that she gives him gifts of her wisdom, her company, but also this night visit.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of, to me, it was her with him in his room. Mm-hmm. But the next morning at breakfast with Fuji, it's almost pretending it's a courtesan, and whether that's knowingly with Fuji that they're doing that, so that, well, nothing really happened. I sent a courtesan into your room, is, you know, what she says.
Yeah.
But it certainly looked like it was her. Whether it was to throw Fuji off the scent, who knows, you know?
Well, I'm guessing that we will know as the season goes on, but as far as the end of episode 4, I was absolutely convinced it was Mariko paying a night visit, and then they have a conversation the following day, and you can see on John's face, he seems like he's going, but it was you last night, and then catches himself. Yeah. So we know the courtesan in Arjun is a very important character, who we'll actually talk about her in a moment. But it just didn't look like her. And it seemed to play that it was, Mariko, and she's covering it up. But I just don't know, even after watching the episode a few times now, I just couldn't tell for definite, was it Marie Cornet?
Yeah.
Part of that is because writing notes on a show that has lots of subtitles on it means we're looking away and we're trying to catch every single thing, but we can't pause every single second. So hopefully we'll be able to watch it one more time and just check and see if it was Marie Cornet.
Well, I certainly thought it was.
Yeah. I thought it was, and then they described it the following day, and I'm going, okay.
But I think it could that's easily just be the cortisone way too. Of yeah. deflecting,
yep.
you know, and saying, no, actually, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, we don't talk about that again,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. Or, you know, it's to throw Fuji off the scent, say, no, I sent a courtesan in.
And that's what I thought. Yeah, I thought they were just throwing her off the scent. But the courtesan is a very important character in this village.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about her a bit in our Bushido number three, Yabushiga and his nephew Kashiki and the courtesan.
Yes. This is really good because, I mean, for me, I really enjoyed this across this episode. And at its heart is the fact that Yabushige finds himself in an impossible situation. You know, we get from Toranaga's son, as mentioned earlier, the concern that an ally with ambitions is no ally at all. But Yabushige very quickly kind of realizing he's in an impossible situation. You know, in the same way as John Blackthorn, he is in some ways his fate is being determined by Toranaga here. But we have him and his nephew, in a sense, plotting. You know, Yabushige is now going, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place here, in that Ishido thinks that I've betrayed him by having smuggled Toranaga out. And Toranaga is wary of him because of his knowledge that he effectively was allying himself with Ishido. And, you know, I'm now pledged to Toranaga's losing cause as he sees it. His nephew is almost like his rock. He is the one that can see how he can twist these things to his benefit or to his uncle's benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And in the way that he prepares for the big event of their arrival in the village, making sure that everyone is prepared, everything is cleaned, that it shows off this village, he then begins to see how if they take control of the new regiment being taught these new tactics of the barbarian, that can ultimately belong, that knowledge, that power can belong to them.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, the reason why I put Kashigi's courtesan in this is that she's kind of there in the background and she's kind of really suspicious. I felt this from the first episode, Kiku. And we actually have this later where this plotting, this use of his ability to spot an advantage or to exploit a thin vein of opportunity for and on behalf of his lord and uncle within Yabushige. And suddenly she begins whispering ideas to him
yes.
that he ultimately should be our leader, that he shouldn't be deferring to his uncle, that actually maybe he is the one that is clever enough to supersede him and should be using that for his own advantage, not for his uncle. You know, it should put him in a good light, not his uncle.
Exactly.
And you get this lovely moment where Kashigi then is whispering, you know, and sowing doubt and division to an overeager Lord Nagakado, Toranaga's son, who, you know, feels like he's not being brought into his father's sort of world, in a sense. He's been left out key decisions. He feels he should be there with the strategic tactical decision making. And you know, in some cases he has, you know, good ideas, but again it's just you have Kashyyyk then whispering this division and doubt to this young lord, you know, that we must act because we have Ishido's general has arrived, which has put Yabushige's position in an even more compromised position. You know, he's absolutely worried. He can't believe he's in this impossible situation. You know, it's either he's going to have to perform seppuku or his belly's going to be slit anyway. Mm. And Kashyyyk has this idea to help, which is that, you know, to put the danger on Yozim so that he doesn't learn these new tactics.
Well, absolutely. That's the important part about this, really, is that Kashyyyk is under the impression that effectively they were going to train up the army to potentially fight against Ushida in the future. If there was some kind of civil war, they would have a trained army. And with the arrival of his general to take back Yabushige, and Yabushige offering to show him this army in training, the enemy is going to see all your plans. You need to take action right now, is what he's saying to Nakakado.
Exactly. And Yabushige, though, is saying this to Yozen in order to, again, try and undo what he feels Ishido thinks of him, that he's betrayed Ishido.
Yeah.
So it's all become this kind of complex, almost futile web for Yabushige, which Kashyyyk seemingly can cut through in terms of plans to kind of take him out of this impossible situation.
Exactly. He's saying to him effectively, if Toranaga gets killed, or now that he's given in his resignation, maybe you give them as a gift to Ishido. You know, maybe that's the way you seal your place in his court or below him, the new lord, is by giving him the army as your gift. But again, seeding it with Nakakado that this is your enemy. You need to make sure that your enemy doesn't see the tactics that you may be using against him. Now, there's a feeling that if Toranaga was here, he would have obviously made a very different decision than Nakakado makes in this episode. And what's really been told to us about Nakakado is he doesn't have the experience, and that's what Toranaga's trying to give him. He's just trying to give him the experience. Who could possibly have the experience that Lord Toranaga has? Definitely not his very young son here. He's really coming out for the first time on these types of missions.
Exactly.
But as usual, the youthful exuberance is there. He wants to make a big impression on his father by making a big decision.
Yeah, which Kashyyyk is exploiting and manipulating that vein, you know, where he says that the Lord should make this decision in place of Toranaga, as he's not here.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, which, you know, which we'll certainly get to, is there's a massive suggestion here that Kashyyyk, given Kiku's whispers, also hasn't told his uncle about how far he will effectively take this. So, I mean, this is the case where has Japan gone to war over, you know, the ambition of
two young men
here.
Over the next generation, stepping up too early, effectively. Yeah. One more thing we want to talk about before we get on to that final point about the war and what happens at the end of the episode is just talking about the warfare tactics. So Bushido number four is our naval warfare tactics.
Land.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Again, following on from John's comment last episode, where he was told that he was going to become the Hatamoto, which is, and he was going to train up the army for Toranaga. And he's kind of going, well, I'm a pilot. I've no idea what tactics people use in war, certainly not for ground armies. And as he explains here, you know, he's there looking at this army in front of him going, well, I can teach them to, I guess, reload and clean their guns and target people using guns. And they're going, well, the Portuguese brought us guns, what, 7 or 8 years ago, was it? Something like that, or 7 or 8 months ago? We know all about guns. We've been using them. So it's not about that. It's tactics that the West might use that could allow us to get the edge on our opponents. And they almost dismiss him until he tells them, but you don't use your navy for warfare, and maybe I could help you with that.
Yeah, it's effectively, he's saying, use the tactics of the Navy for land-based operations, this idea of siege or bombardment mm-hmm. from sea. So he talks about the walls of Osaka. You know, as many riflemen as it would take wouldn't be able to burst through those walls.
Exactly.
But my galley from the bay firing cannon would see to those walls.
Exactly.
The other interesting thing that I think that you get here is that his cannons seem to be almost like a new model or an evolution of the technology of cannons that's happened. And so they seem more accurate compared to the cannons that have been shown to them previously by the Portuguese. So
yes.
We see here that they actually think he's mad putting mm-hmm. the targets so far away.
Yeah.
But they're hitting them each time.
Yeah.
There's an accuracy there which they see then the potential of.
Exactly. I'm not too sure whether it's specifically the cannons or whether it's showing them how to use them properly, because it
Maybe.
Feels like they disregarded the cannons.
Yes, it's not absolutely.
It's not something that in the past they've really used for warfare. It exactly as you said, Yabushiga says, you know, they're completely inaccurate, they'll never hit a target, and that's what John uses to convince them. He shows them him hitting three targets with no problem at all. In fact, hitting two targets straight through at one time with one cannonball. So really gets them going and gets them understanding this. And throughout the passage of time here, it seems like months go by as John trains up this army in using these naval tactics. But I guess, you know, the real piece that he's underlining, exactly as you say, is the fact that they could go by sea and take out an entire fortress, because fortresses aren't built to withstand these types of attacks, because nobody's done it before, right?
Yeah.
So that's
exactly
where he's going to give his his benefit to.
And
the,
you have
to the
other type of shot being shown as well, which causes wider damage. The chains that are mm-hmm. between two cannonballs. I can't remember the term that they use for them, but it's a military one, I think.
Didn't see that. Damn, I should have looked that
well,
up.
Well, and I think ultimately, I guess, coming to our Bushido number 5. Mm-hmm. And that's what they use against Nobara Yosen, who has come here to bring Yabushige back to Osaka
mm-hmm.
to face the consequences.
Yeah. Yep. Woof.
Yeah.
Interesting decision here. And again, I don't want to continually refer to Game of Thrones, but I will. This feels like the end of a Game of Thrones episode. This moment when everything's looking okay. You know, you see Yabushige, you know, you're not really on his side as much. He's, kind of a grey character. He's a very charming, charismatic kind of character in the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of want to see him succeed here, and you think he might have gotten himself out of the situation, showing off the new tactics that John has trained his army up with, showing them off to Nobara Yosen. And Negakadu is the one that's in charge of firing the cannons, and he gets them turned around and fired straight on Nobara Yosen's men.
Yeah.
And they are ripped apart completely. The horses are ripped apart. The men are ripped apart. And it's such a brutal moment. I was saying before, or after, just after we watched the episode, I was saying, you know, I'm kind of not desensitized to this, but I've seen a lot of things that are in TV shows, a lot of battles, a lot of, you know, big brutal moments. We watched The Boys, you know, and covered on the podcast. You know, it's one of the most brutal shows out there. But this moment when Nagakado and his men come back up to kill all of Josen's men who are lying on the ground, and you see them cut in half. You see
absolutely.
Arms
They're
off,
decimated.
Legs off. They're absolutely decimated.
It's the flail shot
that
kind of rips through them. I mean, it to an extent, you know, Nagakado has shown Josen the power of these tactics,
mm-hmm.
quite literally.
Yeah.
He
I don't
has
think
shown
he's reporting
tactics.
Anything back to Ishida, though.
Well, and Nakado finishes him off with his katana,
mm-hmm.
you know? And Yosen says, this is not the samurai way. You know, what have you done here? Like, this is not how we would do it.
Exactly.
And I love the fact that sort of smirking behind Yabushige is his nephew.
I love that shot, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. And, you know, his uncle is there, again, put back into an impossible situation.
In total shock about what's happened here,
And I don't think he knows that this is where it would go.
Oh, not at all.
Don't think he knows about Kashigi's poison in the air of Nagakado.
Exactly.
So really, really good.
Yeah.
You know?
And as Mariko said, this is war.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, fantastic kind of ending, really, really puts everything on high alert.
Yeah.
So yeah, can't wait for episode 5.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any notes from you, John, on the episode? Anything we haven't talked about that you wanted to mention?
No, nothing from me. Derek, what about yourself?
Just one thing that we didn't mention that I just thought was interesting. And, you know, we talked a lot about Kashigi trying to get a better position with his uncle, Yabashiga, throughout the episode. And, you know, obviously that's been one of our major points to talk about. But it was interesting in the arrival of Yabashiga, his discussion with his nephew. First thing he asked him about was, have you found that spy in the village that found out about the ship and about John Blackthorne? Kashigi admits he hasn't been able to find the spy. So I just thought it was interesting that, again, Yabashiga is going, if we're basically going to be hiding here, training an army, we don't want to have that spy here of Toranaga's to get the information back to Toranaga. So as you say, playing lots of sides, trying to find his best route through everything that's going on in his life here with Yabashiga. I don't know whether we'll find it, especially after the way this episode ends.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. So, as I say, even Kiku, while she's whispering these ideas to Kashigi, and like, to what extent does that mean she's on his side, or whether that is another plant here from one of the other lords on the council, or even from Toranaga? I mean, this is just really the web of disinformation is huge.
Yeah.
Or has potential to be huge here.
Absolutely.
So, good.
She feels like a character we're definitely going to see a lot more of throughout the season. But here, to me, that felt like her own whispers to Kashigi being able to manipulate the leader of the village. That's what it felt like to me. I don't know whether she's working for anybody else. It felt like she was working for herself.
Yeah, I know. there is a hint of that for sure. Definitely. Excellent stuff. Yeah, I mean, for me as well, this episode was 5 quality sakis out of 5. I really
fantastic.
Enjoyed this.
Not the cheap stuff.
I absolutely love Kashigi's character here in this episode and his relationship with his uncle, Yabashiga. I love that Nagakado, and I guess his anxieties, his fears of not being, you know, the great man, being manipulated in this way. I just loved all of that. I loved sort of development of Mariko and John's relationship, as well as John's relationship with his unwilling consort, at least to begin with, in Fuji. I really enjoyed seeing all these different elements come together in this episode. So, 5 quality sakis out of 5.
Fantastic. Let's get on to some feedback about last week's chapter from our wonderful fellow warriors. Yes, as I mentioned last week, it's just me for the feedback sections for this couple of weeks because John's away, but he will be back next week for the feedback and listening to the awesome thoughts of our wonderful fellow warriors as well. But before I get into that, just one bit of news about Shogun. Disney has announced that the premiere had 9 million views globally on Hulu and Disney Plus, which, you know, is just such a huge number. When myself and John thought about doing this on the podcast, we were wondering whether this was going to be a niche show because obviously it's in Japanese and it's, you know, that's not always going to hit and land with an audience, but it's effectively the biggest premiere on Hulu, including The Bear, which is hugely critically acclaimed and has lots and lots of viewers as well, as you may know. But I just thought it was a really interesting piece of news, and hopefully everybody's tuning in for each episode and each episode of our podcast, of course. But let's get on to your feedback, fellow warriors. First up, we have an email in from the wonderful Penny Lennox. Penny says, "Hi, Derek and John, and thank you for the podcast. Congratulations on a decade of podcasting. Like a lot of people our age, I have fuzzy memories of the 1980 Shogun miniseries. I remember my mother watching it in her bedroom and letting me watch with her until there was a Harakiri scene and she realized I was a tad young and sent me to bed. The scene is, of course, permanently etched on my brain. I picked the book up several times and read several chapters on various nights babysitting as a teenager, but never finished it. As an artist, one thing that really stood out for me in the 2024 production is the cinematography. I'm not sure, but it looks like they've been shooting on film, not digital, and using older lenses. Many scenes have a very 70s, early 80s soft-edged look. This can be achieved by smearing Vaseline on the lens, as long as you're okay with destroying your lens. They're also using very shallow and precise depths of field, such that often a character's face is in focus, but their hair or clothing is soft, and other characters are blurred. I find the effect to be beautiful. It also forces your eye to focus exactly where the director wants you to focus. Between that and the need to read subtitles, this show is one of the only ones where I don't find myself fidgeting or playing with my phone when I watch. I even found myself last night perched on the edge of my sofa, leaning forward, intently watching The Escape from Osaka. As a lawyer, the political manoeuvring and technicalities are fascinating. I have deep respect for Toranaga-sama and how thoughtful and measured he is. His strategic use of the laws is brilliant, and I think John Blackthorne agrees. He seems extremely impressed. Keep up the amazing podcasting. I always enjoy your coverage of the MCU and The Boys, etc. Looking forward to Invincible later this month. Penny. Thank you so much, Penny. Yeah, I think a lot of us of a certain age come to this with a little bit of knowledge of the 80s series. Interestingly, there's a story about it recently that this is the reason why sushi restaurants are so popular in the US. The viewership of Shogun was so high, and the interest of Japanese culture after the original Shogun was so high that it led to a huge growth of Japanese restaurants all across the US. I just thought that's fascinating as well. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, the cinematography, the attention to detail in this show, it's just fabulous. And what the directors are doing with the visuals on screen, making you focus on every single moment that they want you to focus on, you're totally right. Yeah, this is absolutely a show that I can't pick up my phone during, if anybody rings me during that time, or if anybody sends me a text during that time, you're not getting an answer for at least an hour. And yeah, one of the biggest things about the show definitely are the political maneuverings. It's one of the big things that makes this show so intriguing. Great stuff. Thanks so much, Penny, for your email. Hopefully you'll hear from me later on in the season. If you want to check out more from Penny, she's currently doing a Buffy the Vampire Slayer rewatch podcast called Still Slaying over on our friends Podcastica. Go check that out. And I think she's also should be kicking off her coverage of the excellent British comedy available on Hulu and Disney Plus called Extraordinary, very funny adult comedy about a character that doesn't have superpowers when everybody around them has superpowers. A good laugh, really good coverage there from Penny and Greg as well. So go check that out on Podcastica too. But thanks again, Penny, for your email. Next up, we got an email in from Jimbo Uren again. Thanks, Jimbo. He says, "Hi, Derek and John. I'm really enjoying Shogun as well as your coverage, which not only brings the usual mix of enthusiasm and insight about the show, but also helps understand what is going on at a deeper level. Whilst the action and scene is obviously fantastic, this world is so layered. It is great to really get inside the characters' minds and motivations, and your podcast means I can get even more out of seeing the series on screen. After the shipwrecks and world building of the first episode, the second was slightly quieter, but no less exciting, with that stunning tracking shot of the assassination attempt a particular highlight, and getting my hopes up for some full-blown ninja iterations in future. Episode 3, though, was breathless once it got going, with that incredible fire arrow attack in the woods, and particularly Mariko's kick-ass work with Naginata, followed by a nervy boat chase. Funny enough, though, my favourite bit was the lighter-hearted diving scene at the end, which added yet another layer of complexity to Toranaga's personality after so much seriousness. A couple of other bits to mention. Firstly, I love the attention to detail and how the Japanese ladies move, with a sort of fast tiptoe that you can see in the wider shots, but if you watch them in front of tracking shots when walking towards the camera, they move so smoothly it almost looks like they're floating in a sort of Spike Lee dolly shot. It is never mentioned yet in the show, which makes me appreciate it even more as a background detail. Lastly, a shout out to the great Joaquim de Almeida, who for me will always be the man who calls himself Bucho in Desperado. Although he has been in tons of films and shows for his cameo as the fellow prisoner in episode 2, almost unrecognizable under that beard and hair other than his distinctive voice, I'm not sure if we will be back, but great to see him there stealing the scene as always. Sayonara, Jimbo. That's a funny one. Yeah, there's just so many character actors that are in this show that it's difficult to call them all out. I remember when we watched the episode first time, it took me a while to pick up that it was Joaquin de Almeida in that episode playing the priest in prison with John Blackthorne. But yeah, I had to go through hundreds of appearances on IMDb to find where I knew him from. And of course, Bucho in that Desperado, one of my favorite films from the 90s. Really, really cool seeing him in here chewing up the scene scenery as always. Great stuff. Yeah, a really good call out to that attention to detail about how the Japanese characters move. There's been some great behind the scenes videos released on the Shogun channel. One particularly goes into that walk that the ladies have to do wearing the kimono because it's so tight around them. They can only take small steps, but it's fascinating some of the training that they had to go through to get everything period detailed to the 1600s. Really, really good stuff. So much cool stuff in episode 3 and the previous episodes as well. But thanks so much for your email. I'm glad you're liking the podcast too, Jimbo. This is absolutely something that we try and get as much detail as we can into every episode. But of course, getting your emails in about the episodes as well from our fellow warriors adds a little more detail, bits that we may not have picked up or may not have highlighted in our coverage of each episode. Let's hop on over to Facebook. We got a message in from Jamie Lawton who says, again, blown away by this series, by the scope and breadth of the cinematic vision shown by the makers. Also, in the original series and book, the Black Ship captain is only the captain of the ship for one trip. He is swayed into helping Toranaga by the priests who, excited by the offer of the church in the Edo, offer the captain the Black Ship captaincy and the profits that come with that for the next year. That's a really interesting change, Jamie, because the negotiation that goes on between Toranaga and the Black Ship captain is that he's going to invest in the silk trade and then he gets to keep 50% of the profits. So I guess more proactive from Toranaga and getting him more involved in convincing the Black Ship captain to help them out. So that's quite an interesting change from the book, isn't it? I kind of like the change. It makes Toranaga more active in his escape from the city. And, you know, I guess it puts the church in a bit more shadow as to whose side they're on. You know, we mentioned them saying they were going to pray on what could be the right decision rather than directly influencing the leaders on behalf of Toranaga. So that's an interesting change to the book. Thanks for that, Jamie. And finally, Dr. Bob Phillips sent in his thoughts on the last episode, in episode 3. He says, well, didn't this have it all? Escaping in drag, flaming arrow ambush, flip-flopping on political alignments like a politician in a swing state, lots of chicanery on the high seas, well, harbour, and swimming bears. Wonder if we will find out next week who won the race. And can we take a moment to appreciate the delightfully heroic act of Buntaro sacrificing himself for his lord Toranaga and to allow the romantic B plot to move forward in an ethically easier way? Absolutely, Dr. Bob. I think that scene with Buntaro at the docks is just absolutely fantastic as he holds off the oncoming army. It's really, really good. And just seeing him go off into the distance, battling on as his lord and his wife and the rest of Taranaga's group get away from the docks. I think it's just an absolutely amazingly shot scene. Really, really good. Will it allow the romantic B plot move forward? I guess so. Yeah, I guess we'll see. How that plays out during the rest of the episodes, to see how it may influence Mariko and John's possible romantic relationship as the episodes go on. I guess that will be more clear later in the season. Brilliant stuff. Thanks everybody for your feedback so far on Shogun. I'm glad you're all enjoying it. Please keep emailing us into feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com or pop on over to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/tvpodcastindustries. You can share your thoughts on any of the spoiler posts that are up there for each of the episodes of Shogun. We put one up just as the episode comes out, so you can share your thoughts on there for the episodes. We've got lots of other stuff up on TV Podcast Industries. Currently, we're covering Star Wars The Bad Batch, an animated series set in the world of Star Wars, of course, which we've been covering each season. We're on the final season of The Bad Batch at the moment. And also, we'll be returning to much more adult animation with the return of Invincible Part 2, which is coming this week as well on TV Podcast Industries. Really looking forward to that show. If you've been watching things like The Boys with us on TV Podcast Industries and haven't given Invincible a shot, check it out. It's from writer Robert Kirkman, who is obviously behind the infamous now Walking Dead TV show. This is his superhero animation show. So very adult, very violent, very brutal, especially the second half of season 2. So go check that out, and hopefully you'll join us here on TV Podcast Industries for our coverage. Also to mention, if you want to support the podcast, you can of course support the podcast by sharing it with your friends. Just take the link and share it on any of your socials. You can also support us by going over to patreon.com/tvpodcastindustries. Every penny that you donate over there goes into the production of the podcast as well. But you can also send us a one-off donation if you want to, going through buymeacoffee.com/tvpi. But of course, we absolutely appreciate every single one of you who's tuned in and listening into the podcast and sending in your feedback to us. It's been great to hear from you. But now back to myself and John on the past to say goodbye.
We will be back next week with our chat all about Shogun Chapter 5, Broken to the Fist.
Ooh, cannot wait.
Sounds for that one. Painful.
It's going to be really interesting to see how this goes. Thanks so much for joining us. Talk to you next time.
Yes, thank you so much, fellow warriors, for joining us. As always, remember, keep watching and keep listening. Bye.
Bye.